Mrs. Margaret Duncan of the Tucson Unit of the Women's Overseas Service League, and I'm interviewing Mrs. Claire Brownsville Allenwood in Tucson, Arizona. Mrs. Allenwood is a member of the Tucson Unit of the Women's Overseas Service League, who served in World War I. Claire, what branch of the service did you serve with?
The U.S. Medical Corps.
And what was the name of the hospital?
U.S. Army Base Hospital Number 20, University of Pennsylvania Base Hospital.
And how did you happen to be in the University of Pennsylvania Hospital?
I wasn't in the hospital.
How did you happen to join the hospital unit?
I wanted to, and since a family friend was a chief benefactor in equipping the unit, and I finally squeezed in.
Did you?
I didn't go through any military channel. I never went to a recruiting officer.
Yeah, or anything like that. Did you, in what capacity did you join the hospital unit?
Secretary.
As a secretary. How many, and you're as a civilian employee?
Yes.
How many civilian employees did they have?
Three, two secretaries and a dietitian.
And a dietitian. What influenced you to volunteer? Because you wanted to go overseas? Did you have family members overseas?
Because the man I wanted to marry had gone and joined the French Army about 4 months before. Joined the French Ambulance Corps.
Oh, I see. Was your father overseas at this time?
As a matter of fact, at that time, everybody in the country wanted to go to war. It wasn't an individual desire on my part. Every woman wanted to get these serves and go to France.
This was in 1917.
Right.
And the United States had just entered World War I. What did you do prior to your going there?
Worked as the secretary.
Yeah, whereabouts?
In San Francisco and Philadelphia.
Oh, I see. And so you were in Philadelphia
right.
At this time. And this, the University of Pennsylvania Hospital was under the auspices of the medical college from the University of Pennsylvania, is that correct?
Yes, I think that's taken for granted. When it's called the University of Pennsylvania Base Hospital.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I have to make another question. But.
Yeah. And so you did, what did you do in the hospital unit?
I worked in the headquarters office, which was in a little villa. We had an office about 8 feet square with a table made out of boxes. And two enlisted men and I kept the records, and I acted as secretary to the commanding officer who had a small office next to ours.
After you joined this unit in Philadelphia, where did you go, what port did you go to for embarkation to France? You went to New York. And you did this in, and you left New York, it was in the springtime of 1917?
I think so.
And what ship did you go over on, can you remember?
After a week on Ellis Island, we boarded the Leviathan. It had been the Vaterland, the great German cruise ship. It was the largest ship in the world. And there were 5,000 troops aboard. The holds were filled with bunks, five tiers high. Many of the men were sick. It was a big ship, and so fast that we couldn't have any sort of a convoy. Before we sailed, we experimented. We were put into those frightful rubber arrangements. It was solid, heavy rubber, and it had a metal band, shoulder height, to hold it out like this, and a cover clamped over your head. And here you were in this rubber case. And on this enormous ship on one of the high decks in case of attack, in case we had to abandon ship. We were supposed to jump 5 stories up and land on a raft that looked about this big. In other words, we didn't have any sort of protection.
You didn't have any protection in case the ship was attacked by a submarine.
Right.
So, but how long did it take you to go from New York to
France? I think it took us about a week.
And where did you land in France?
Brest.
Before you went to the port, did they outfit you with a uniform?
Yes, we went to New York and got our terrible uniforms, our awful shoes and our ugly hats.
Can you describe the uniform a little bit more?
Just a dark, dull gray serge. We had the same insignia as the nurses. I think a different metal. I think theirs were brass and ours were sort of a dull copper. Long skirts, they were just like they could be. Oh, and we had coward shoes, which were a nasty yellow with sort of toes, very odd toes. Well, and black felt hats, men's hats.
Were the shoes lace-type shoes?
Yes.
Oh, high shoes with lacings?
Yes.
I think one of the other nurses that was served in World War I, I think she talked about shoes, and I think they're probably the same idea.
Undoubtedly coward shoes, if she was in World War I.
Yeah, that's probably what it was. When you got over to France and you landed in Brest, where did you go from there? Where was the hospital?
We got off the boat hungry and marched across the dock through a gate where there was a French woman with a basket of rolls. The nurses scorned the rolls, but my friend and I each grabbed several. And we boarded a tiny little French train. Very small, seats were small, very cramped. And I think we were on that train 3 days, and we had no meals. They passed out some beef, you know, canned beef, a few things like that. There were no meals served, there was no hot food. Sleeping was a problem because it was crowded. I think we were porter's seat and they were small. What we did was put our suitcases between the two seats. In other words, in the space between the facing seats, we piled our suitcases so we had a kind of a flat surface. And that's the way we slept. I guess we took turns because we were porter's seat, we could not sleep for. So one thing that's delightful about the trip was the country. And I suppose it was Brittany we went through, and the little towns were very picturesque, and the peasant women with their lovely little handmade white caps, designed by them, embroidered by them, lace made by them, beautiful little caps on women, all dressed in black, everybody was in black. And one day the train was stopped, as it stopped many times, which is why it took so long. In the field were some women working, and they came over toward the train and stood down below the bank and talked to the nurses while the train was stopped there. We had one very pretty nurse, pretty blonde woman, one of the Philadelphia nurses, and one of these women took off her cap and brought it up, put it on the head of the pretty nurse. That was the one really charming incident on the trip, which was rugged. And we got to our destination, I don't know what time of day, but our base was the entire resort village of Chateauguay. It was in the mountains, I think it was about 20 miles from Vichy. Beautiful country. And a beautiful resort, health springs. It was a spa, the lovely park, a promenade, where in the peace days of peace there had been concerts, and Easel Spring was had a little spring house with an attendant in a white cap. The French come and drink the waters there to recover after gorging all winter. They come there and drink the waters a little better. Of course, it was more or less abandoned. Of course, the hotels were empty. They were empty, but they were not clean. The big hotel, the dominating hotel, Hotel Park, had been occupied by Algerian troops who had no idea, how to live in a civilized way. The nurses, helped by enlisted men, washed it down 3 times before they ever started to use it. They had used the balconies for their toilets. It was a mess. Also, we had no food. they finally put out some prunes. Nobody liked prunes with me, I did. Anyhow, that eventually we started to get settled in, got our supplies, and people got their assignments. And the nurses lived in not a pretentious little hotel. I think the big hotels were all turned over to wards. But I think we used all 35 of the hotels.
Used the 35 hotels as hospital wards with hospital beds for the wounded?
Yes, what else?
Yes. Did they, the wounded came in by ambulance from the, from the battlefield?
I didn't see very much about the actual hospital operation. But my impression is that all these men had either been to a field hospital or had some kind of care before they came, because we were some way back from the front.
It probably functioned as what we call now a general hospital.
Right. The Hotel de Parc was a surgical hospital, and other buildings were for various other things. I remember one building, one hotel we always passed when we went to the little village part of the resort was the venereal disease department. And various buildings were used for various things, staffed in various ways. And the nurses lived very Spartan life. We had army customer. Food was what we didn't have mostly. For breakfast, we'd have a mush of some kind. But not a drop of sugar, a drop of milk. Once in a while, they did a canned fig on it. We were short of it wasn't a starvation diet, but it certainly was less than plain. But of course, we were gay and young, and we were soon being invited out to dinner. And there were, of course, wonderful restaurants, the food in these. There were several hotels that still functioned, which had not been given to the hospital. And the food was perfect. Delicious to us, who've never had French food before. And there was a hard and fast military rule that any woman who had any social intercourse whatever with an enlisted man would be sent home. So we were very careful about having dinner with enlisted men, but that's the way we got enough to eat, and we had a lovely time because, of course, the enlisted men are our age. And the enlisted men were largely University of Arizona, University of Pennsylvania students.
A couple of the things that I wanted to ask you about: what demanded the greatest adjustment for you? Was it the uniform, or the lack of freedom, or the regulations, or what was it that seemed to bother you the most?
Nothing
thing?
Bothered me at all.
Nothing? Oh, you were young and carefree and nothing bothered
nothing
you?
Nothing bothered me at
all. You said earlier that your mother came overseas and that she was with,
She was with the YWCA in London and Liverpool. I think that one of the chief things they did, that the unit there was made up of American, Australian, and New Zealand women. So Mother met some splendid women, of course. And one of the things they did was patrol the streets at night, trying to keep American soldiers out of the hands of those terrible street women. It was an odd sort of service. But I think Mother worked very hard at it.
Now, your mother was also a member of Women's Overseas Service League here in Tucson, can you?
Right. She enjoyed that.
What was her name?
Kate Johannesson.
Was she one of the women who was instrumental in forming the Women's Overseas Service League in Tucson?
No. She was quite an older lady by the time.
Oh, by the time it was formed.
Yes, she was in her 70s or 80s.
I see. When you were in France, did you ever have an opportunity to go to England to see your mother?
Yes, I did. I had a lovely leave with her. We were in London and Liverpool. And, of course, by then she'd learned a lot about England and saw many of the historic spots.
Now, your father was stationed in France.
Yes, he was.
Were you able to see him?
Yes. After I enlisted, when I got the army, nothing to do but my father's go. So he gave an age which wasn't true. And enlisted and came in as an enlisted man in the medical corps. And he was with what's the hospital? We were in a base hospital. It's another kind of a hospital.
Field hospital.
Just stupid me.
Your father was in what kind of a hospital?
Is it on?
Mm-hmm.
My father was in evacuation hospital number one, Toul, T-O-U, well, they're not spelled Toul, I guess. He had never had anything to do with medicine or or had any military service, whatever. And so they put him doing carpentry, at which he was quite adept. He loved people, he loved especially young people. And in the course of time, he got acquainted with the boys in the surgical ward. He was very concerned because he felt that they weren't helped as much as they could be, and he felt that by arranging for individual cases, apparatus to perhaps stretch or a support, he could help. And he did. And got real recognition from the doctors and the nurses, not to mention the men. So that by the time I got there, he was kind of a privileged character. He had his own little, what would you call it? Well, he had a kitchen. He had a little building in the back somewhere where he made breakfast, pancakes. He just kind of lived as he wanted to and helped a great deal in the surgical ward. I think it began with his concern about what the boys were fed. And one thing they were fed was potatoes, which it was a good food, but they never were cooked enough. They never were hard enough. And he just, with no authority or whatever, just raised cane because the potatoes weren't cooked. So, what with one thing and another, as I say, he became quite a special character. So that when I was there, the commanding officer, that's what this is, had a car and a driver take one of the nurses, I forgot what her rank or specialty was, but three of us, and we toured the entire front, which was one of the areas which had had the heaviest fighting over the whole period of war. We looked out across this wide valley, which had been populated, and you cannot see one living thing. You would not know that any human habitation had ever been there, except part of it was stained. You could see where our town had been because the soil was different than where the fields had been. It was horrible. On the other side of the valley were the German placements, which we, some of which we went through. Many signs of God meant us. It was very spectacular. Some of the camouflage was still up in the trees along the roads. And I think I stayed 3 days. I think I lost my suitcase with the few pretty things I've been able to buy in Chateau Guillaume, where they had lovely shops. But we had a very, just a very pleasant visit. Found an old friend there from school days by accident. But place that Father made for himself from nothing, and the lovely tour that we had in recognition of it, that was the highlight of that visit.
Where were you on November 11th, Armistice Day?
I was in Tours, which was, of course, very thrilling everywhere, anywhere. But the minute the news started, of course, ran like wildfire. Everyone swept into the streets. The same story everywhere, you know. But sad in a way, because all the women were in black and all the French men were in their old pale blue uniforms with their legs or arms gone. Nothing but wounded and the women in black. So we Americans celebrated.
And then it was short after that that how many months do you think it was after Armistice Day that you came back to the States?
Oh, I don't know. Does it make a difference?
No, just a few months.
I think it must have been on until next summer.
Oh, I see. It took a while to get things.
There was some time.
Yeah, get
there
things settled.
Yes. I think it's probably 6 months at least.
Yeah. And then you came back to the States, and where did you stay in Philadelphia? Did you come back to Philadelphia?
Well, briefly, but that I got out of the hospital as fast as I could. Mm-hmm. I don't think I was retained at all. I don't think I went any military place. I think I just got off the boat.
Got off the boat and went home. How did you get out here to Arizona, to Tucson?
Well, I finally married the man that I followed to France, and he was in Arizona. He was born in Flagstaff.
Oh, I see. And that's and then you came down here to Tucson.
He was born in Flagstaff.
Oh, I see.
He never lived there.
Oh,
family
I see.
Lived in Bisbee. I went to the family lived in Bisbee. We came here.
I see. And then you lived here and you raised your family here.
Right.
How many children do you have?
Three.
Oh, you have three.
And I now have seven great grandchildren. So I've lived in this house for 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
So my wandering came to an end.
Your wandering came to an end at.
I think that kind of gives you a picture of certainly a very different career. I certainly don't think I contributed much to the war effort, though somebody had to work in the office. I mean, men were doing the work that I did, so it's a lot of people didn't have to do anything very distinguished.
Oh, well, the records are very important, and that's...
We just sat on our apple crates. And
mm-hmm. You said something about that your service sounded very frivolous, but that you really did have some hardships, so why don't we talk a little bit about those?
Yes, I must say I had a very good time with lots of good friends and lots of good food and travel. I later went to Italy for 2 weeks with a friend with whom I'd served all that time. We each had a musette bag, which is about like a large purse today. We traveled 2 weeks ago, that much baggage, so I learned something. And tours in the middle of the beautiful terrain where all the historic castles of France are located, and we visited them one at a time, most of them without even guards or guides, deserted. Every man in France was either crippled or gone. So it was quite a special and privileged time in that beautiful part of France. It's the loveliest part of France. And that was a really great experience.
But you said you also had some hardships. You had some cold winters.
We had cold winters. It was hard to, couldn't get a bath. Things like that. And we had to wear these terrible uniforms. Nothing that you could really call a hardship. Our life was stark, but it certainly wasn't miserable or uncomfortable. But it certainly gave me a great impression of the nursing corps. Nurses were great. We had an excellent unit. Our commanding officer, Colonel Thomas H. Johnson, was a professional military man, very able, and very fine. And the director was Dr. Carnett, who was the head of the University of Pennsylvania Hospital, I think, I suppose the director. So. And our doctors were all Philadelphia doctors, and most of the nurses were Philadelphia nurses. So it was in which people knew each other. I think it was a very unusual unit. It was not the start of military life that you might expect. And of course, we were in a beautiful place. First, I was in a beautiful place. Oh, Chateau Guillaume was a summer place, as I said. Well, I was lovely, but I could suddenly felt the fall coming on. I realized I wasn't going to be summer, and up there in the hills. So I got a transfer to Tours to the chief surgeon's office, and just the same kind of work. I never did anything but office work, but I did live in two marvelous places. Really. Certainly, I think I said that there were no hardships, but there were hardships on the nurses. But for this reason, they were mostly Philadelphia nurses who had done private nursing, and they had lived in beautiful houses, and they had had service, and all that sort of thing. And I think the way we lived was very difficult for them. Not that anyone ever complained, but I know it was a distinct change for the nurses. Not to mention the much harder work.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think wartime nursing is pretty much hard work. So they probably...
In that big hospital, in that big hotel, there'd be 6 or 8 boys in a room. A lot of steps. I think that's more than enough.